This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Flint water crisis took a new turn with Governor Snyder's announcement that there's been an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease in Flint. Between June 2014 and November 2015, Genesee County had 87 cases of Legionnaires and 10 deaths. The normal cases in prior years, 6 to 10. The outbreak began soon after the city switched to water from the Flint River and ended after it went back to Detroit water. Still, Governor Snyder says it isn't clear whether the two are connected.
There's investigations still going on to try to make those determinations, but from a scientific or medical point of view, I don't believe that determination can be made today.
Dr. Mark Edwards is a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech. He's a nationally renowned expert on water treatment and corrosion. Dr. Edwards and his team were among the first to call attention to the lead contamination in Flint's water. A pleasure to welcome you back to Stateside, Dr. Edwards.
Pleasure to be here.
Are you at all surprised by this news?
No, research by Dr. Amy Pruden and myself and our team here at Virginia Tech published last year actually predicted that this sort of thing would happen. Now, this is a new result, but the general idea is that the lack of corrosion control in the Flint system ate up the disinfectant, the chlorine that's normally put in the water to kill these bacteria. And it also caused the release of iron to the water. And so those two factors in our laboratory experiments dramatically increased the amount of Legionella that grew in water heaters and hot water systems. So we actually wrote a proposal on that this summer to go and study Legionella bacteria currents in Flint, because it would have been expected, based on this very new research, that there would be much higher incidence of Legionella bacteria in buildings and homes of Flint.
So this is not, as we've, I think I'm hearing you say, and tell me if I'm wrong, as we've seen in other outbreaks of Legionnaires' disease with standing water, this is less about that and more about the fact that there was not corrosion control?
That's the current hypothesis. Now, it's not 100% sure that this is tied to the change to the Flint River water. The association, though, looks very strong. And as I said, it's consistent with our hypothesis and our recent experimental data that would suggest that interrupting corrosion control would actually cause this type of problem.
So more bacteria, food in the river, then, is what we're seeing because of the fact there was not corrosion control.
Correct. But even more importantly, the corrosion ate up the disinfectant that's added to the water. And then on top of that, the iron, those bottles of red that people were holding up, that's iron rust. And that's actually a nutrient, unfortunately, for Legionella. It's a trigger for it to grow. And, of course, we know that there was plenty of that. So it's really those latter two factors that may have triggered these very high levels of Legionella in the system and could have caused the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease and the deaths.
Now, do you believe there is still a risk of Legionnaires for people in Flint?
No. We agree with the governor's office and the department, DHHS, that this is probably a problem of the past. They are being vigilant and looking at this and tracking this with the local health department. But there's every reason to think that the levels of Legionella in the system will now return back to where they were before the problems occurred in 2014 summer and 2015.
The governor says he learned of this spike in Legionnaires just a few days ago, and he made the news public yesterday. Based on what you've been going through 2014 and so much of 2015, does this, in your view, exhibit greater responsiveness or, if you will, transparency on his part?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, everyone is taking this issue very, very seriously. We contributed our data on Legionella in the Flint system to the process. I think it was mid to early December of this year. And I think they responded very quickly.
Are you satisfied now with the steps and the actions that are being taken in Flint since basically state officials admitted that you and your team were correct and they were not?
I'm completely satisfied about it, although I understand, I get that there's almost nothing that can be done at this point to repair the damage that's been done in trust and the trauma that the Flint community has gone through. And I'm actually very concerned about that, because now that you have good people on the job trying desperately to do their job, we are still getting calls from individuals both on the ground trying to help Flint residents and individual Flint residents who literally do not trust anything the state or city is telling them. And so how we're going to be able to overcome that is really a dilemma going forward.
What do you think? What might it take to be able to do that? More resignations?
You know, I don't necessarily think the resignations are going to help. I mean, although the perpetrators of this are still, as far as I know, on the job, both at EPA and MDQ. So I don't know. I mean, once that trust has been lost, it's going to take years to repair.
I'm speaking with Mark Edwards, the expert on water treatment and corrosion from Virginia Tech. It was Mark Edwards and his team who were among the very first to reveal people in Flint were being exposed to lead because of contaminated water. And you just touched on something I wanted to talk with you about, Dr. Edwards, and that is the EPA. I was going over documents and commentaries at flintwaterstudy.org and reminded again that it was another water expert who tried to get the state to address the corrosion treatment, and that was the EPA's Miguel Del Toro. In emails and in memos, he constantly spelled out his concerns about the lead corrosion problem in Flint. And like you, he was brushed off by the Department of Environmental Quality. But should we not have expected more action by other EPA officials?
EPA buried this problem. The record is absolutely clear. They've been in this up to their eyeballs since early July. And a lot of the fault, in fact, that is now being placed on the governor and former Mayor Flint, Dane Walling, can be directly traced to the actions of the EPA administrator, who told them that Miguel could not be, you know, she apologized for what this brave employee did. And by the way, he's not just any employee. He is recognized as the foremost expert on the lead and copper role in the United States. And his concerns were completely buried and brushed off. And EPA never communicated to either the governor or to the mayor Flint that his concerns should be taken seriously. Instead, they apologized for what he did.
And he was taken off the Flint water issues, was he not?
No one ever heard of from him after MDEQ bragged to Flint residents that they had handled him. So they told Flint residents they wouldn't be hearing from Miguel ever again, and that's what's happened.
So you're referring to EPA Region 5 Administrator Susan Hedman?
Yes, and in the Freedom of Information Act request, we actually found an email in which she apologized directly to Mayor Walling, said that she would be vetting and editing his memo along with other higher EPA officials. And, of course, that vetting and editing went on until November of this year. So literally nothing was done with Miguel's memo from EPA except to silence and discredit him from early July to November.
Have you had a chance to have conversations with Mr. Del Toro since all of this basically vindicated what you were saying and what he was saying?
Miguel has been instructed to, apparently, in the emails, to not talk to people.
Well,
that was the email, that she was not inclined to let her staff talk to ACLU or any other outside people.
Now, in your experience, because you've worked nationally with water issues, does the EPA usually defer to states in something like this? Or, you know, is this to be expected?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a very deferential response. Whose jurisdiction is it? But as we mentioned in Flint Water Study opinion piece yesterday, why does that apply to an agency who's breaking the law? EPA now acknowledges they knew about this in April of 2015. And she was pursuing a legal opinion whether EPA had the authority to enforce the federal law. And in the meantime, they knew that Flint children were completely unprotected. So it's a bureaucratic response, completely overlooking their moral responsibility to protect children.
Which is another criticism that was aimed at our state government.
Well, correct. But, you know, if you look at the timeline in emails, Mr. Walling and the state government were reaching out to the appropriate agencies and being misled at every turn.
Meaning the DEQ and?
Yes, and EPA.
And the EPA.
And so the thing that they can really be faulted for is being overly trusting of MDEQ and EPA, the agencies paid to protect us from this problem.
What lessons do you believe the rest, now that the rest of the nation and really the world is writing about this story now, it is really broken on a large scale, what lessons can be taken away from all of this?
Well, I think that we've got a real problem with these government agencies. We don't have any checks and balances on their power. And the assumption is that people in these positions who have no profit motive whatsoever to do what these agencies did, in fact, they are paid to stop this from happening. There's really no check and balance on their power, on their unethical actions, other than people from completely outside the system. First and foremost, the residents in Flint who did not give up. For example, Leanne Walters, who is the one who figured out that they were breaking the law. She's the one that figured this out because her child had been lead poisoned. And everyone else who stood up to help them. And it's really a miracle that this came out through all of these actions of outside people in spite of everything these agencies could do to stop the truth from coming out.
Mark, you and I would very likely not be having this conversation. Flint children would not be living with lead in their bodies. People wouldn't be taking buses and walking to fire stations for cases of free bottled water if the state had spent the money to implement corrosion control measures. And how much would that have been a day?
About $80 to $100 would have stopped 90% of what happened at least. And it would have been the minimum requirement to meet the federal law. And on top of that, I'll add, we wouldn't be talking about this Legionella problem either, because that can be traced to the exact same issue.
Now, I have to ask, based on, as you say, you had this hypothesis about the Legionella, and now here we are reporting this spike. Do you have other thoughts about what else might be in store for people in Flint?
I think that we've finally learned the worst of what's happened. Even if there were other diseases that resulted from this, and there could have been, there's no reporting system or no way of detecting it. So Legionnaire's disease is the only disease of its type that's caused by water distribution system problems that's actually even tracked. And because it's so many years after the fact, we will never know with 100% scientific certainty whether those deaths and the increased incidence of disease was in fact attributable to the lack of corrosion control. There's a strong association. It looks quite likely. They're going to be vigilant and tracking in the future, but it's too late. It's too late to know for sure what happened and why.
Dr. Mark Edwards of Virginia Tech University. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Dr. Edwards.
Thank you for having me.